compliments of the season, but also many happy returns on this, your 80th birthday.
Thank you very much.
Well, Willie, your lifetime has been filled with so much music and music making. I'm curious to know if, in fact, this was an inherited tradition. Were your parents musical?
Well, my father was a very fine singer, and as a matter of fact, he was presenter of a church in the north of Scotland in his early married days. And quite by accident, I came across a letter the other day from the parson of the church, in which he told my father he had been appointed unanimously by the vestry at an annual salary of £10.
A year?
A year. And for this £10, he had to walk every Sunday morning from Elgin in the north of Scotland to a place called Draney, about 6 miles away. And he did that for several years.
And your mother, was she musically inclined?
Well, she sang, but, you know, not to the same extent as my father, or my grandfather for that matter.
Well, when your father came to Waterford, did he start music making straight away?
Well, I think a very short time after he came to Waterford, he was appointed presenter of the Presbyterian Church Choir. And he held that position, oh, I think, for perhaps 40 years, during which time he ran all the church services, and he also had an oratorio society, so he did quite a lot for music.
Well, you are a conductor, or shall we say a choir master, of the church choir in Dunmore East at the moment.
Yes, for about 40 years back.
Indeed.
Yes.
Perhaps we could bring the wheel full circle and hear this church choir under their choir master and soloist, Mr. William Watt. Watt is not an Irish name, is it?
No, indeed.
Yes.
Very, very Scottish name, if that's the correct way of saying
yes.
It.
Why did your father come to Ireland and to Waterford in particular?
Well, he came to Waterford to manage an iron foundry when he was a comparatively young man.
Had you many brothers and sisters?
No brothers, four sisters. They all played the piano, and I wasn't allowed to get near it.
Why
so
not?
I don't know. That's why I was never able to play the piano. I was kept away from it.
Was there much music making in your own home?
Quite. quite a lot, particularly on Sundays. Being a Presbyterian family, we observed the Sabbath day by going to Sunday school in the morning, church following that, Methodist Sunday school in the afternoon, church following that. Then when we got home at nights, we sat around the piano, and after supper, we sang hymns till midnight.
There wasn't much time for recreation and all that.
Not really.
When did you have your first singing lesson?
Well, I think it must have been about the year 1920. Now, I sang in Maritana in 1912 as a member of the chorus, but I didn't take up singing really seriously until about 1920. Now, the reason for that was, having left school at 1916, I was appointed an assistant commercial teacher in Waterford Technical School, and all my nights were filled up for several years till I gave up that job. So it was really in 1920 that I started to sing in earnest. I had several teachers. The first one was Robert Ashworth, organist of the Protestant Cathedral. Then, for good measure, I went to the organist of the Catholic Cathedral, Dr. Storer. And then I finished up in Waterford with a Miss Emma Burns.
And at what stage did you start entering for the various fashion around the country?
Oh, I think in 1921 I entered and didn't do very well. But the following year I won the silver medal, and then the following 2 years I got the gold medal and quite a number of cups.
From the scrapbooks which you were kind enough to lend me, I noticed an adjudication by Sir Richard Terry, and it absolutely sums up all the reviews of your singing which have been made over the past 60 years. The occasion was the Fish Cure in 1925, I think it was, when you won the O'Mara Cup. Sir Richard Terry comments on your exceptional diction. He says that the runs were flexible and the phrasing most judicious. William Watt never sacrifices the mood of the song to mere vocal effects. Was this your own thinking, or was it from tuition, or what?
I'm afraid you flatter me. But I never had any trouble with diction, fortunately. And Sir Richard Terry was very kind, and I think I must have been in good form that day.
A streamlet clear and sunny with ripples all about was once a bath for bonny, for gentle little trout. On shore I stood observing with exquisite delight the happy little creature. It was a pretty sight. The happy little creature, it was a pretty sight. A fisher with his angle stood also on the shore, trying to entangle the fishes more and more. I thought it clear the water continues round about. The wretch will never capture my bonny little trout. Thou'lt never catch the varlet, my bonny little trout. What did the busy body afraid to lose his prey? He made the water muddy, and without long delay, his skillful line out reeling, he caught the fish so sweet. I saw with saddened feeling the cheated and the cheat. I saw with saddened feeling the cheated and the cheat.
Unfortunately, Willie Watt, your records have not worn as well as you yourself, but the clarity of that voice of yours shines through. Tell me, how did it come about that you made records in the first place? Were you invited to?
Well, I was at the Sligo Fish Cure when Sir Hamilton Harty was adjudicator. And having won several competitions, he invited me to come and have a chat with him in his hotel. When I arrived there, he said, "Now, Mr. Watt, do you ever come to London?" Well, I said, "I'm actually going to London next week to make a record for HMV. Now, I'd been trying to get HMV to give me a test for years, and it was only at that stage that they had promised to do it. So Sir Hamilton said to me, "You're not going to make a record for HMV." And I said, "Why, sir?" Well, he said, "I'm going to give you a contract now to record for the Columbia Gramophone Company, and don't do anything till you hear from the company when I return to London." And that's how I came to get a 4 years contract with Columbia.
And you made how many records in all?
Six records, 12 songs each year. But then I also recorded for Decca, Panaccord, and HMV at a later stage.
Eileen Oak, and that's the darling's name is, through the barony her features they were famous. If we loved her, who is there to blame us? For wasn't she the pride of Pendrevore? But her beauty made us all so shy, not a man could look her in the eye. Boys, oh boys, sure that's the reason why we're in mourning for the pride of Pendrevore. Eileen Og, me heart has grown grey ever since the day you wandered far away. Eileen Og, there's good fish in the Seine, but there's no one like the pride of Pendrevore. Friday at the fair of Ballintubber, Eileen met McGrath the cattle jobber. I dying to set me mark upon the robber, for he stole away the pride of Pendrevore. He never seemed to see the girl at all, even when she ogled him underneath her shawl. Looking big and masterful when she was looking small, most provoking for the pride of Pendrevore. So it went as it was in the beginning. I did all was bent upon the winning, and big McGrath contentedly was grinning, being courted by the pride of Pendrevore. Says he, "I know a girl that could knock you into fits." At that, Eileen nearly lost her wits. And the upshot of the ruction was that now the robber sits with his arm around the pride of Pendrevore. Boys, oh boys, with fate is hard to grapple. Off me aye, to Eileen was the apple. And now to see her walk into the chapel with the hardest featured man in Pendrevore. And now, boys, this is all I have to say. When you do your courting, make no display. If you want them to run after you, just walk the other way, for they're mostly like the pride of Pendrevore. Eileen, oh, my heart is growing grey ever since the day you wandered far away. Eileen, oh, there's good fish in the say, for there's no one like the pride of Pendrevore.
Willie Watt, the late Compton Mackenzie was a great admirer of your records. I read from your scrapbook again a summing up of your technique as follows. He maintained that you were a perfect artist. The singing was perfect. Perfect diction. What more could you want? Did you know him at all?
No, unfortunately I never met him, but in those days he wrote quite a lot for a magazine called The Gramophone, and he was always very kind to me in his, you know, his talks about the various recordings.
He didn't give you ever a bad review, as far as I
can
see.
No, never.
Yes. Well, he particularly admired a record of yours he reviewed in 1929.
Sorrow thy young day shaded, as as clouds of the morning fleet, too fast have those young days faded, that even in sorrow were sweet. Does time with his cold wing wither each feeling that once was dear? Then, child of misfortune, come hither, I'll weep with thee tear for tear. Has hope like the bud in the story that flitted from tree to tree, with the talisman's glittering glory, has hope been that bud to thee? On branch after branch alighting, the gem did she still display, and when nearest and most inviting, then waft the fair gem away. If thus the young hours have fleeted, when sorrow itself looked bright, if thus the fair hope hath cheated, that led thee along so light. If thus the cold world now wither, each feeling that once was dear, come, child of misfortune, come hither, I'll weep with thee tear for tear.
Willie Watt, you've broadcast from many different places. How did you become involved in the world of broadcasting in the first place?
Well, there again it was through the kind offices of Sir Hamilton Harty, because when I went to make my first records for Columbia, he got me an engagement to sing for the BBC in the old Savoy Hill station. I remember when I went into the studio that day in fear and trepidation, I met the announcer and he said, "Oh, did you bring any watery glass with you?"
Where else did you broadcast from?
Oh, Glasgow, Belfast, Cork, of course, Dublin, pretty well all.
The first attempt at broadcasting from the provinces in Ireland was made in 1926, I think, and Waterford was the venue chosen. Would a certain Mr. Watt have had anything to do with this?
I'm afraid I had everything to do with it. Well, I visited 2RN several times and suggested that we should get a broadcast of our choral society, which I considered was very good. And eventually, Dr. Vincent O'Brien said, "Well, we'll take it, but you must remember we'll have to have an alternative program standing by. Your conductor will get £10 fee if it's a success, but if it's not a success, you won't get anything." Well, it happened to be such a success that Radio Éireann broke all the rules and sent us £15 for our conductor.
You've more or less specialized in oratorio for any particular reason?
Just because I liked it, and I was always very fond of choir work, and that's why I think I sang the Messiah solos certainly over 100 times.
Have you any favorite oratorio?
I like most of the old ones, I'm afraid. Elijah, Messiah, St. Paul.
The Dream, perhaps?
The Dream, oh yes. Yeah. Yes. I was phoned by Dr. Larche after that performance, late at night, and he said, "Willie Watt, I couldn't go to sleep tonight without ringing you and telling you how much your singing meant to me tonight." He said, "Both myself and my wife wept," and he said, "It takes something very special to make us do that."
Well, you've certainly kept Waterford on the map, musically speaking, all down the years. The Waterford Music Club must be one of the most successful in the country, is it not?
Yes, we started the Waterford Music Club really out of a concert which the Cork Music Teachers Association gave a Newtown school in Waterford. A number of us were so thrilled with this concert that we met together and decided, after some discussion, to form a music club. That was in the year 1942. And we've now given over 250 concerts, I think, in that time, a good many of which have been broadcast.
How involved, musically speaking, are you at the moment?
I'm president and chairman of the Waterford Music Club, chairman of the Waterford Singers. I don't know, I have a few other honorary offices, but I forget what they are.
Tell me, have you any ambitions yet unfulfilled?
Well, I'd like to see a school of music in Waterford, but I'm afraid I'll hardly live to see it.
Why not?
Well, I don't really know. We made several efforts years ago to get one underway, but I don't know. I don't think we have sufficient people qualified to teach. We have a hard core that do all the work, but we really could do with several more teachers of music, string playing and piano and singing.
I'd have to ask you, to what do you attribute your amazing energy and mental agility at 80 years of age?
Well, if I said good Scotch porridge, would that horrify you?
No, indeed, it could well be the truth.
Well, you see, longevity is a kind of a disease in our family. I'll give you a little illustration. I found a photograph the other day of my father's mother when she was 100. At that stage, she had 12 children, 78 grandchildren, 182 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-great-grandchildren. And she lived a further 8 years, and history doesn't relate how many descendants she had when she died.
They lost track.
Well, my father was 100 almost, my mother 106, and her parents almost 100 each. So that really, it runs in the family.
It certainly seems to. So 80 is absolutely nothing.
Oh, yes. I'm quite a young fellow, yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Willie, what, have any of your children any special music ability?
Well, my youngest grandchild is a student in the Royal College of Music in Manchester for piano. She's doing very well indeed. My elder grandchild's taste is ballet, and as a matter of fact, she left Dublin and went to Cork and got herself a job so that she could resume working with Miss Moriarty.
Your own father sang at 80, did he not?
Oh, he did indeed. He sang in choirs after he was 80. But I always remember his one joy when he got really, you know, past things, was to tune his wireless in at 10:15 in the morning and listen to the little church service. He always got his hymn book or prayer book out, and he sang away the hymns with the whatever choir was singing from England and the BBC. And that was one of his great joys.
Well, Willie Watt, would it be imposing too much on you to request a special song on this, your 80th birthday?
Well, can I say that it has always been my ambition to sing on my 80th birthday, because years ago, I listened to the famous English tenor Ben Davies singing when he was 80. And I felt at that time, will I be able to sing when I'm 80? And I'm very glad that God has left me the voice.
Once in the dear dead days beyond recall, when on the world the mist began to fall, out of the dreams that rose in happy throng, lo, to our hearts love sang an old sweet song. And in the dark where fell the firelight gleam, softly it wove itself into our dream.
Just a song at twilight, when the lights are low, and the flickering shadows softly come and go. Though the heart be weary, sad the day and long, still to us at twilight comes love's old song, comes love's old sweet song. Even today we hear love's song of yore. Deep in our hearts it dwells forevermore. Footsteps may falter, weary grow the way, still we can hear it at the close of day. So till the end, when life's dark shadows fall, love will be found the sweetest song of all. Just a song at twilight, when the nights are low, and the flickering shadows softly come and go. Though the heart be weary, sad the day and long, still to us at twilight comes love's old song, comes love's old sweet song.
Music and Memories of a Lifetime of Music were recalled by William F. Watt of Watford. Eric de Courcy provided the piano accompaniment for the final song, and the program was presented by Maureen Yvarcourt.